You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. We still don't have that hotkey for Jacob's intro yet. We need to figure that one out just so that way you still have the regular routine. But I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the studio, and man, oh man, do we have a loaded show for you this afternoon. We'll tell you a little bit more about it here in just a few minutes as we go along. But as we mentioned, no Jacob Goins here in the studio with us today as he is spending the weekend, we'll call it, up in Birmingham as the Auburn High School girls in the Final Four up at the BJCC had a big-time lead over Bob Jones, but could not hold on. All first half was in favor of the Auburn Tigers. Unfortunately, the second half was all in favor of Bob Jones, and so a heartbreaking loss for the Lady Tigers as their historic season comes to a close. So no Jacob here with us in the studio today, but we called this guy in from the bullpen, and a very quick turnaround, hopefully not too many pitches thrown, hopefully still warm from yesterday afternoon. We have our guy Tripp Upton here with us, our general guy for primary stuff, kind of behind the scenes, but here with us in the studio, wanted to come on and talk a little ball. How are you, sir? Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday. I'm doing pretty good. It's so nice outside today.
It is.
So that's kind of bringing up the mood right now. But yeah, so I'm glad to talk here. Had to deliver some magazines early this morning. So kind of it's been one of those days that you kind of just, you do what you're told and you know, you be a good soldier, and it's certainly been a day thus far, but it's been great. I'm glad to be here. Glad to talk some hoops, maybe some baseball later, some football. I'm here to talk about whatever you want to talk about. You're the named co-host of the show, so I follow your lead, my captain.
Yeah, well, we appreciate you for being here again. No Jacob here with us up in Birmingham this weekend. So Christian Griffin and Tripp Upton taking you the way here this afternoon. And as we mentioned it, a very, very guest heavy schedule for you on the show today. Four guests are lined up for you on the show here today. And a mixture of just about everything. Our regulars, you have Brad Law and Chris Gordy at 2:30 and 3:30. A special guest joining us here on the phone lines in about 10 minutes or so to sit down and have a really cool conversation coming off a historic win for the Auburn program. We'll give you a little bit more about that here in just a little bit. And then to start hour number two, we continue our plethora, it feels like, of Auburn University coaches joining us on the program. Jacob was able to sit down with head coach of Auburn Gymnastics, Jeff Graba, yesterday morning. And so we have that for you as well, as the Tigers are back inside Neville Arena again this weekend. And so no on-the-line text box today with Jacob out, unfortunately. And with the guest-heavy schedule that is on the show today, the phone lines are open kind of sporadically throughout the show for you here today, but they are open to get the afternoon started. 334-321-1390. Again, 334-321-1390, because we have some feelings. The Auburn family has some thoughts on the conversation that we are diving into to start the show here today. Bruce Pearl is in a little bit of hot water. Tripp, I feel like, is a decent way of going about it. And it's not from the comments about now 30-0 the Red Hawks of Miami of Ohio, where he said that they are not one of the best teams in the country, where the AD responded to him, and now the head coach responded to Bruce Pearl as well. And it's not even about Lenardi and calling out Bruce Pearl. It's about Bruce Pearl talking about his very own Auburn Tigers.
Yeah, which is such an interesting point of where he went on a podcast, I believe, yesterday. Like, we were talking during the show, and I was like, oh, this quote just surfaced, and we're like, okay, yeah, that's interesting. And then the media blowback that's gotten from him on that. I'll read the quote right here. I got it pulled up. When asked about kind of his campaigning efforts with what's going on right now with Auburn being on the bubble and having Miami of Ohio, another team, if they are to lose in the MAC championship after going 30-0, perfect regular season, I believe the MAC has their conference tournament starting on Friday. They will play – the Red Hawks will play the Bobcats of Ohio, University of Ohio. But when asked, he said, quote, "That's objectively how I feel. I am rooting for my son to make the NCAA tournament. Of course I am. Did I help my son get the Auburn job because of nepotism? Of course I did." And then he goes on to say a little bit later, "No, I'm not going to deny who I am and who I have always been, Christian." Your immediate thoughts after seeing that and kind of having been able to sit on them after a day, your thoughts?
I thought it was fake, to be completely honest with you, of realizing that we have used the word nepotism a little bit, or that's kind of been the word that has floated around the Stephen Pearl job. And whether that is right or whether that is wrong, again, on the Stephen Pearl side of things is one man's opinion. And again, if you have opinions, if you have thoughts on this, give us a call at 334-321-1390. But for him to, again, openly cheer for Auburn, I don't think is a surprise, nor would that be any sort of backlash. But the quote of, "Did I help my son get the Auburn job with nepotism?" Of course I did. Yeah. And I feel like that is what is rubbing people the wrong way right now, because Jacob and I have talked about it plenty of times, about it being the worst kept secret in Auburn. There was not a single person that woke up to their phone notification or whatever it was and saw that Stephen Pearl got the job and were completely shocked.
No.
You feel like that was borderline obvious. Now there's just plenty of questions that come up following.
100%. And you look at it like the, you know, nepotism in sports, such a weird thing, especially in college basketball. Like, you look at, there's a lot of people that criticize when coaches have their son on the roster as like a, you know, as a bench player, like someone that's going to come in on senior night and hit a three to, you know, get the crowd pop.
Which there were a couple of over the past couple of nights.
Right, which there have been. And, you know, you look at, but, you know, there's some people like over at Indiana DeVries, his son is one of their best players.
Yeah.
And so, you know, sometimes there's a little bit of controversy there. But when you look at it from a coaching perspective, and not giving the opportunity for Auburn to properly vet and go out and look, and maybe there's other options out there that are more proven, right? Stephen had zero head coaching experience coming before the Auburn job. He was a medical sales representative before he was an assistant coach for the Tigers under his father, Bruce. And as you know, I'm fine with him having a role if he's a good basketball mind, played at Tennessee under his dad. But I think he might not have been ready. If his last name isn't Pearl, and let's say it's, you know, Stephen Griffin or Stephen Upton or Stephen Goins, is he going to get the same look and opportunity as the assistant coach that someone else would if their last name was Pearl? That's really the thing I want to look at, because you look at it a couple years ago, I remember Stephen was getting looks at for some like A-10 jobs or some mid-major jobs. And
yeah, I know Murray State was in there. I know that there were a couple others that his name was heavily involved in the running, and they were going after him. And from the Auburn perspective, you never really heard that pick up any steam whatsoever.
No, exactly. They did their due diligence, because he's not only a son of the greatest Auburn basketball head coach of all time. I don't think I'm, you know, jumping a gun by saying that here, in Bruce, at least coming into this year. But having, you know, and having the pedigree and being around the program, you know, everyone gives him credit for being such a defensive mastermind once he was the defensive coordinator, assistant head coach of Auburn. And I would have loved to see him. How does he tackle recruiting? How does he tackle all that? Even at like an A-10 or like a Murray State, kind of what you said. But he didn't do that. And instead, you go from one of the most, probably the safest job, Bruce Pearl, lifetime contract, still works for the university there, to, oh, now you're going to do my son that's never coached from as a head coach ever outside of like maybe practice. Not a good look.
And I think that, again, is where that rubs people the wrong way. If you're just joining us, talking Bruce Pearl's quotes about cheering for his son in the tournament, which is one thing, but then also admitting and also you don't want to use the word bragging, because that's definitely not the correct way of going about it, but very proudly sharing that nepotism was used to get this job for Stephen Pearl. And so, again, it just makes so many questions that follow that, and even more so, it just kind of throws the gas under the – or the light under the fire just on – some of these questions that we have been asking ourselves and you don't really have answers on, but my goodness, it just makes it more and more confusing about, makes you wonder how long the deal was in action. How long was this known by the Pearl family? How long was this known by Stephen? Did Auburn truly know about what the initial plan was for Bruce Pearl? How long did Stephen know? And then obviously the most important question, which we'll dive into here in a little bit, but did the players know? And you feel like those are the immediate questions that every Auburn fan is asking themselves, and based off of the result of how we sit right now on what, March 5th, you feel like some of those didn't go the way that you were hoping.
Not at all. I just think that when looking at the timeline, it's the first day of practice, right? And I think that they knew, like, it is too late, because you look at some of what the rules have changed with the transfer portal and with coach hiring and firing. Once the coach leaves or gets fired, there's a coaching change, you can jump in and explore transfer portal options. If Bruce Pearl steps down, you know, you go to a Final Four and he steps down in May, probably you're not getting some of the transfer portal talent you have. You're probably also losing, I would say you're losing the talent you have now to the portal, but like only Tahad Pettiford's coming back from last year's team. So I think a lot of those guys that Bruce personally recruited, and then they get there and before they've even played a second in an Auburn jersey, hey guys, I'm actually not going to coach you. My son is going to coach you. Who, he's good defensive mind, but you know, maybe, you know, he'll figure it out on the job. That is something that I don't think the players knew. If I had to be, you know, pure speculation. But if you're like a Keyshawn Hall, where your game is kind of more resembling to what a Bruce Pearl style would be shooting threes. You know, you play a little bit of defense, you're able to do a lot of rotations and stuff, running a pretty deep bench. Stephen Pearl's not done that. It's been a lot of short benches, like you know, it's,
which is not all his choosing. He's having to coach with the hand that he was dealt, but
correct,
with injuries playing a factor. But I think you're right on the idea of Keyshawn Hall coming to Auburn to try and become a better defender, to try and become just one of the premier athletes in the league. You've already seen the scoring, but you also see the defensive. The lapses, I guess you could say,
yes,
on what he has on the other side of the half court. And so, again, we're taking a little quick break here in just a minute to get on with Brett Bowen, voice of Auburn women's basketball, to talk about a really important win. But you talked about it before we went on the air of, man, what does this look like for the impact of the legacy of Bruce Pearl? Does this play an overall factor? And again, it's still a big if, and we are not even done with year one.
Right.
This is not even Stephen's true team. Yes, he's in charge of a lot of the recruiting decisions and things like that, but are you at the point now of this bleeding down into the previous regime on how this could take a factor and take a big impact on what Bruce Pearl means to Auburn?
I think that he's always going to be someone that's in the Auburn community. Like, again, he works for the university. He's always at games. And, you know, unfortunately, we can't make fun of Alabama fans for Nick Saban going on TV and campaigning for Alabama to be in the playoff like he did a couple years ago, because that's what Bruce is doing right now. But I think that Auburn, you know, that it hurts because he basically punted a year, right? That this year, a year that we could have made it to a tournament run with the talent we had coming in. Coming off a Final Four, the second one in program history, the second one under Bruce Pearl, now you're in danger of maybe missing the tournament. That hurts Pearl, Bruce, and if it doesn't work out, and this was like situation that he manipulated to the advantage to make sure that the person he went hired got hired, that would hurt his legacy in my mind, especially that he, you know, only celebrated him and his family's success over the teams and the universities.
You almost take a little bit of the blame off of the other people that are in charge based off of those decisions, based off the strings that were possibly pulled from underneath the rug or from just behind the closed doors of what this transition period was between the Final Four run with Bruce Pearl resigning and retiring the day before practice got started. Again, everybody had the 30-day window, I believe, or the two-week window, I think is what it actually was, right, on exploring their options. Everybody returned, but Auburn, as of now, not even the last team out. Or the first team out, rather. Second, they are the second team out now in the tournament just because of the wins that happened earlier this week, yesterday as well. And so everything going to come down to Saturday in Tuscaloosa, and a story that you feel like is old as time that you bring with the football world as well. We'll take a little bit of an early break, because when we come back, we have the voice of Auburn women's basketball, Britt Bowen, joining us on the phone lines to recap a historic win over in South Carolina, as Auburn picks up a very, very nice win in the first round of the SEC tournament.
This is Coach Larry Vickers, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We continue on here on the Thursday edition of On the Line, and my goodness, what better way to bring this guy onto the phone lines to have a really, really fun conversation, as Auburn women's basketball did what was a historic moment yesterday in the SEC tournament. The Tigers picked up their biggest win, arguably, of the season, becoming the first number 15 or 16th ranked seed to win an SEC tournament game since the conference expanded the bracket. A statement moment for what is a team that's been battling all season long, but gaming maybe to that bright spot through conference play in college basketball. It was a huge step forward, and what better way to help us break it all down than the voice of Auburn women's basketball and softball, Mr. Britt Bowen. Britt, we appreciate your time as always and taking the time to join us.
Hey, Christian, War Eagle. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, last night it was exciting, and very thankful we got to be a part of it.
Yeah, you were on the call for that one yesterday in South Carolina. Again, Auburn becomes the first 15 or 16 seed in the SEC tournament to win a contest since that bracket was expanded. Just how big of a moment was that game for this team and their response from how they ended the regular season?
It was huge, because, man, last Sunday at Fayetteville was so deflating on so many levels, just because that was a game Auburn was expecting to win. But, you know, I thought Sunday was very humbling and a reminder of the fact that you can't just walk into a game going off numbers and going off of records, right? You have to show up and play. And I thought Auburn got a hard dose of reality of that on Sunday, and how this team came back yesterday, just a couple days later, and how Coach Vickers and his staff got this team ready to play again. I think that speaks dividends about the culture of what Coach Vickers is trying to build here at Auburn, because that's not easy to do. I mean, Auburn had every right to hang their head, show up to this game, go through the motions and end their season, and they did everything but that last night. So all in all, like, just with how the season has gone, and going back to the fact that, you know, Coach Vickers had to put this team together in a 30-day span after he got hired, it's pretty impressive, and it's something Auburn should be proud of.
Auburn with a big-time win over Texas A&M yesterday evening, 50-49 in the first round of the SEC tournament. And box scores can tell you one thing, but watching the game sometimes can tell you a completely different story. What, when you look at the way that Auburn played this game yesterday, what stood out to you the most about their performance? Was it the rebounding numbers? Again, when you're looking at the box score, was it a couple of the double-doubles? What stood out to you the most last night?
Yeah, a couple of things. Number one is the rebounding, because Auburn got rebounded by a mile in the first game in College Station. And Texas A&M, they only shot 36%. They shot well over 50% in the first meeting, along with 9 threes. So that didn't happen last night. Auburn's defensive execution last night, in my opinion, was the difference in the ballgame. Hottie Lay was absolutely a difference on the board. She had a career-high 15 rebounds. Of course, she hits the game-winning shot to give her a double-double. And also Caitlin Duhon. I mean, Duhon, 14.7 rebounds. That's Kate's second game this year against A&M in double figures. I mean, those two kids really showed up to play. But, you know, if you talk about the team as a whole, and I agree with Coach Vickers and what he said last night in the postgame, it truly was a team effort last night. It took everybody on the floor. if they played in the game last night, they contributed in some way. And for Auburn to beat a team like Texas A&M, who on paper, I think, had a little more depth, Auburn, they showed up, and the culture of the program showed up. But for Auburn, I don't think they out-rebounded an SEC team maybe once or twice all year, and it surely wasn't by 12 rebounds like they did last night. So they're going to have another tall test tonight with Ole Miss, but I tell you, if they can bring that same effort, they're going to give themselves a chance, because winning the rebounding battle is a major step in winning basketball games, and that was a key factor last night.
For an Auburn team that has battled throughout all of a really tough gauntlet of SEC play, how rewarding was it for you to see the smiles on the faces of players and Coach Vickers and be able to talk to them post-game, just to see that full effort translate into a postseason win like that?
Super rewarding, right? I mean, because, you know, like, how this team got put together and compared to every other team in the league, and going through the coaching change and navigating the portal and all that with a new coach and just all the logistics that come with that. And they put their heart and soul into this program. And yeah, some of these kids are one and done kids, but they still chose Auburn, right?
Right.
And
yeah,
they still show up every day and they do the right things. And no one deserved it more than that team and that coaching staff. You know, I'll be honest with you, there are a lot of people that probably thought that Auburn might not win a single game in SEC play this year with the roster that Auburn put together. And Auburn's not only got three in the regular season and now an SEC tournament win, including a top 25 win against Alabama. So, I mean, there were four other teams last night who would have loved to have been in Auburn's situation, you know. So, and the fact that Auburn could overcome that adversity and show up when literally no one was giving them a chance. Again, just so proud of those kids and to see them celebrate. That's what it's all about. And I'm hopeful for the returners last night will give them a taste of what's to come in the future of this program with Coach Vickers, because getting a win like that year one,
yeah,
I think that says a lot, especially to the kids returning, but also to the freshmen coming in. And of course, in today's world, kids coming in from the transfer portal. I mean, what better way to recruit than to prove that, hey, well, we're making some noise in March.
Right, yeah. You've called a lot of games with this Auburn women's team, and not going to ask you to rank those top moments, but I think you hit the nail on the head by talking about what this win does in terms of significance for Auburn, rather, over the next couple of seasons, just knowing what is being built. And I feel like that was the biggest exclamation point, the biggest driving factor on what this could be and what Larry Vickers is trying to bring back to Auburn women's basketball.
100%. And I think about the kids like Caitlin Duhon and Hottie Lay. I mean, when things weren't going well in SEC play, you know, those are two kids Auburn's trying to bring back, I know. And for Kate, I mean, Kate and Hottie both have played some of their best basketball games down the stretch in February when Auburn wasn't finding a whole lot of success. So, and for those kids, again, to continue to grind it out, be coachable, get better. Harrison Koulibaly is another one. I mean, she showed me up last night big time on the broadcast. Remember, I told you that numbers don't always tell the story.
Yeah.
Harrison, no one plays harder than that kid. And in February, she struggled at the free throw line. I think some with confidence, some with fatigue also. And last night down the stretch in the second half, she hits back-to-back clutch free throws, which may have been the first time this month in a clutch moment she hit both free throws at a trip to the free throw line. So, you know, like I said, it shows that this team's not giving up. And right now with this season, year one, not playing with the same deck of cards as everyone else, Auburn should be extremely proud.
A little bit of a bittersweet feeling, I guess you could say, as we have Britt Bowen here, voice of Auburn women's basketball, with us on the phone lines here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. And I say bittersweet because Auburn fans and Auburn women's basketball wants to relish in that win against A&M last night. But the way the SEC tournament works, you're back on the floor here again tonight against a really good Ole Miss team. We'll ask a question about them here in just a moment on the way out. But what is the biggest challenge in your mind and in Coach Larry Vickers' mind about about that quick turnaround when you're playing so many games and so many different days, and especially a really close game like that on a back-to-back day?
Yeah, number one, yesterday is yesterday, and the team, they celebrated that. They're proud, and that I know that gives them a pep in their step going into today, but also that result was last night. There's a new challenge ahead today, and talking to Coach Vickers, pregame interview for the broadcast is already done. The team and the coaching staff, they're moving forward, and that's what you have to do, and that's what's so great about having Coach Vickers here is, you know, he won the conference tournament his last 3 years at Norfolk State. And, different conference, but he still has that experience. He knows what it's like to bring a team back in back-to-back days. Sure, Ole Miss is coming in off of rest, getting a bye in the first round. But, this is a team that Auburn has not seen in the last month. You know, so for Auburn, they've got to quickly get reacclimated with the scouting report. Cody McMahon will be a big part of that scouting report for Ole Miss, one of the best players in the SEC. So Auburn better bring it tonight, because Ole Miss, they play a physical and athletic style of basketball. And if you like athleticism, they're a really fun team to watch. So Auburn's going to have their hands full. But, you know, for me, it's getting your body recovered for a second game in a row. Like last night, Caitlin Duhon, she played 39 minutes, only came out for one. So, but she's a grinder. She's the toughest kid on the team. But for Auburn tonight, again, it's going to take everybody, so they've got to be ready.
You mentioned it's February 2nd, the last time that these two teams met in Oxford, and it went in favor of the Rebels. But you mentioned a month ago, these are two very different teams. I think this Auburn team is very different than they were the first time that these two teams met. And so from a matchup standpoint, what will Auburn have to do really, really well tonight against Ole Miss if they want to keep advancing in the tournament?
I think for Auburn, they're going to have to force Ole Miss into some outside shots. I think in the first game against Ole Miss, they did a great job of getting to the glass. They outscored Auburn 40-28. They also out-rebounded Auburn 51-23. Those two things cannot happen, right? So, and Auburn did a couple things last night, and they can't live and die by the three. They're not a good enough team to do that. But Auburn's also going to have to knock down an outside shot here or there a little more consistently than they did last night. Because the thing about Ole Miss, they can score the basketball. Cody McMahon, she's going to run the point. I like to tell people she is like a full-blown running back running the point guard position. She's that athletic, averages 19 points, 5 rebounds a game. But the only thing about McMahon, and this is something that's often overlooked about Ole Miss, they have so much talent around her. I mean, there are some other kids such as Christina Walla and also Latasha Lattimore. I mean, that's Ole Miss's big three. So Auburn's going to have their hands full. A foul trouble is going to be a key factor tonight for Auburn, because Ole Miss, they're top 10 in the country at getting to the free throw line. So Auburn's going to have to play as disciplined as they did last night, maybe a step better to have a shot down the stretch tonight against Ole Miss. Because, again, this is one of the more athletic teams in the league, and them coming off a bye is certainly going to be interesting. But I will say this is an interesting note going into the game tonight. This is actually the second neutral site game that Auburn and Ole Miss has played this year, because the two were supposed to play in Oxford back on February 2nd.
That's right.
But the ice storm that came through, Oxford was shut down for about a week or so. So that game got moved to Birmingham, to the BJCC. And so that's something I think that's probably never happened before, Auburn and Ole Miss playing not one but two neutral site games in 1 year.
That's right. I completely forgot about the ice storm. When you're looking at the box score, you see that Ole Miss was listed as the home team. That's a really weird tidbit, but hopefully in favor of the Tigers here tonight. Auburn and Ole Miss doing action at 5:00. Britt, I believe you'll be going on at 4:45. Tell the people what they need to know.
4:45 on the air with Dr. Larry DeShera. We'll be on ESPN 106.7. You can tune in online at auburntigers.com and also the Auburn Tigers app. You can tune in for free every single broadcast all season long. You can also catch every Auburn broadcast that's available in the Auburn Sports Network. You can listen for free on auburntigers.com or the Auburn Tigers app. Again, just download those and you'll be set. It goes for football, men's and women's basketball, baseball, softball. And we would certainly appreciate your listening tonight and your support as Auburn can hopefully get it done one more time.
Britt, we appreciate your time and your insight. As always, we're looking forward to getting together again real soon.
Christian, appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, War Eagle.
That's the voice of Auburn women's basketball, Britt Bowen, joining us here on the phone lines on the Thursday edition of On the Line. We'll take a break, and we'll continue our guest-heavy schedule talking all Auburn University sports. We have Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network joining us, as he does every single Thursday at 2:30. We'll talk baseball, we'll talk basketball, and a whole lot more. Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network joins us right after this.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Thursday edition of On the Line, which means it's time for our weekly special as we get to welcome in the engine that makes the Auburn Sports Network roll. Mr. Brad Law here with us. Brad, we appreciate your time as always. And the week just feels a little bit smoother here on the Plains with a couple of nice midweek wins.
Yeah, no, Tuesday night was a good night, and they were back-to-back, too, because of the way that they were scheduled for television. But baseball getting a win over Samford, a win in a game that it sort of controlled throughout. They scored single runs in the first, the second, and the third. And, you know, the pitching, again, was really good. Andres Alvarez, he went through the lineup two full times.
Mm-hmm.
The first time through, he had six full counts. And the second time through, I only think he went to a two-ball count once. So really smooth, locked in, maybe his best outing of the season beyond that first inning. And so really good to see. Baseball continues to play well. Just playing good, solid baseball. That was good to see. And then, of course, basketball does what it does. Shoots 54% for the game, almost 60% in the second half. Tejada and KO combined for 48 points in a win over LSU. And that sets up a pretty big one this weekend as well.
Well, I know you had your hand a little bit more tied into the Auburn baseball side of things. You mentioned a 6-2 win over Samford. And when you're in some of these midweek games, you're seeing it all across the SEC where you get a couple of really big upsets with the smaller teams, knowing that you're going to get every single one of their best arms, their at-bats, their mentalities. How have you seen that work on the Auburn standpoint of when you're playing in-state teams like Samford and then just knowing you're going to get their best? How have you seen Auburn handle that pressure inside their own stadium?
Well, you know, midweek games in general, 2 weeks in a row after wins, we've interviewed players and they've, you know, I think it was Bub Terrell last week and it was Andres Alvarez this week, say some version of midweeks are hard. Midweeks are hard, especially for the bigger teams. And, you know, a team like Auburn with a top 10 ranking, your goal is to win weekends. And those midweek games are important, certainly, but sometimes the game is much, much bigger or is circled for longer on the opponent's schedule than it is for yours. And that's not to disrespect any opponent. These coaches talk about respecting the game and respecting every opponent. You know, sometimes messages are different in other dugouts and games aren't treated equally. And so they can be a challenge. But their batting average isn't as high in the three midweek games as it is on the weekend. Their pitching has still been good. And really, aside from the eighth and ninth innings in the Cincinnati game where it kind of got away from them a little
right.
bit, they've pitched well enough to win any of these midweek games. The kind of pitching performance they've gotten in these games would tell you that they are respecting the opponents and taking these games seriously.
We've talked so much about the pitching side of things, and rightfully so, but Jacob and I have spent a whole lot of time as of late just talking about this pesky offense and how it almost feels like that annoying little brother that just does not go away, but in the best way possible. You mentioned one in the first, one in the second, one in the third, and even at times you feel like Samford feels like they won an inning, and all of a sudden you look up after three innings and you're down 3-0. You've seen it so many times, especially in Arlington as well. Talk about just how annoying that is as another team having to face and how you've seen the guys on the mound respond to that.
It would be one thing if Auburn's pitching had been suspect, if other teams were getting a chance to come back
right.
in these games.
Yeah.
And you know, Nebraska did in the in game one of that series, and certainly Cincinnati did the same thing to Auburn in the first midweek game. And, you know, the Tigers kind of took that game and then started doing the same thing to other teams. When your pitching is holding the opponent down and you just continue to scrape a run here, scrape a run there, you're now playing from such a leverage position that it becomes really frustrating for the other team. It becomes a, you know, they start to press, maybe they make a few mistakes, the pitchers have to feel like they can't give up anything else, and then they make a mistake, and then you're able to get a big inning, which they've done a couple times. But, you know, no, this Auburn offense is hitting .304 for the year. They have 121 combined hits. They're averaging 10 hits a game, and it's balanced. Chase Frelick has 19, and Eric Guevara has 15, and Bub Terrell has 17. Like, they have three guys with between 15 and 19 hits. 121 hits, let's see, 28 of those are for extra bases. So, like, four times as many or three times as many singles as you have extra base hits. They're just doing little things well, and they are 1 through 9 relentless offensively. If one guy's having an off night, chances are four guys aren't having an off night.
Talk a little bit about Chris Remberts and the impact that he has made since coming back from injury. You mentioned just the lineup 1 through 9 continuing to rally, and how you don't even have the traditional 7, 8, 9 guys anymore. If anything, it feels like it's a first, second, third leadoff hitter just back to the top of your lineup. But how much more complete this Auburn lineup feels with Chris Rembert, but then even more complimentary of how those guys stepped up when he was out?
Well, for sure, Brandon McCrane stepping up while Chris was out is one of the stories of the team so far. McCrane's batting .500 for the year. He's got an on-base percentage of .600. He leads the team in walks with 9, has a couple of doubles. He's been fantastic. Oh, and 5 stolen bases to go with it. So an on-base percentage of .600. Now, you know, Chris coming back has one of the highest OBPs on the team at .440. And that's, you know, with time missed. I think over the weekend he went 3 for 13 at the plate, but he has a double. He's driven in 6 runs. He's walked 5 times and then hit once and was fine. One of his hits was a double. He scored a couple of runs. He's not back up at the top of the lineup. They're kind of, you know, they're still protecting him a little bit with some of the bats on either side of him in the lineup. But no, the fact I thought, Christian, that he's played now 3 straight games back at second base.
Right.
So this time a week ago, we thought, all right, well, we could see him for 2 games against Nebraska. Maybe one of those is a DH. Well, we saw him once as a DH and then twice in the field as well. And then he was back in the field against Samford Tuesday night. So he's back and ready to go. And it's only a matter of time, I think, before, you know, Chris is fully back to himself.
Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network joining us here on the phone lines, as he does every single Thursday at 2:30. And Brad, looking ahead now to this weekend, Auburn back inside Plainsman Park for yet another home series. They look to continue their double-digit series winning streak against Winthrop, or I guess against home teams, but against Winthrop here this weekend. What are you most interested in seeing from this team as they continue building momentum early in this season and trying to stack it up until you get to SEC play?
Yeah, you continue to be solid on the mound in those starting roles. The starting pitching for Auburn has just been sensational. Between Jake Marciano and Alex Petrovic and Jackson Sanders, those guys don't have a loss on the year. They have lower run averages. Their walk-to-strikeout ratio is still out of this world. Jake Marciano has started 3 games. He's pitched 16 innings. He's given up 9 hits, and he hadn't walked anybody. 0 walks, 29 strikeouts in 16 innings. He's only given up 3 extra base hits.
Wow.
So, you know, I think that's dynamic. Your batting average against your 3 starters, Marciano 164, Sanders 233, Petrovic 200. You're going to win a lot of games that way. So can they continue to go? Can they continue to give you 5 innings or more? That's, I think, what I'm most interested in seeing. And then, you know, defensively, the left side of the infield, there were some errors in that game Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Does McCrane start at 3rd again? Does Guevara go back to 3rd? Do you try something else at short? Left side of the infield defensively, I think we'll have our eye on that this weekend.
Shifting over to the hardwood for just a few moments as we have Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network here with us on the phone lines. Auburn basketball, as we mentioned earlier in the show and earlier in this call, getting a much needed win over LSU outside the, let's just say, the non-friendly tip time, which lucky for you, you were able to call a little bit of baseball. So did you get to listen to this on Wings, or how did you keep up with this basketball game and what was a really, really nice game inside Neville Arena?
Yeah, I listened to it a little bit on the radio, listened to a little bit on the we do a YouTube feed for the
Fortside
cam as well. And so I watched Andy and Randall do that a little bit. And no, just really good to see. LSU tried to make a run early in the second half.
Yeah, they did.
They came down and hit three threes in a row. Two of them were just ridiculous. And there was that tension of, is this going to rear its head again? But it didn't. They were able to cut off LSU's run and continue to score. And I thought it was the most aggressive and confident offensive performance we had seen out of Auburn in at least 3 weeks. So really good to see that. Hopefully that carries into Tuscaloosa over the weekend for the most important game of your season to this point.
You mentioned it. Yeah, very quickly, the focus turns to Saturday with Alabama hosting Auburn inside the airplane hangar. From your perspective, what does Auburn need to do really, really well to get that big time win, to get the most important win of the season, knocking off Alabama and strengthening their case as they try to make their way to March Madness?
Be the aggressor, turn them over. Alabama turned it over 14 times in the first meeting here at Neville Arena, and Auburn scored 20 points off of those turnovers. When teams beat Alabama, you take away their chances to shoot the ball. They're a really good shooting team, obviously. They would love to sit in the right corner and take 50 threes from the right corner in this game. You can't let them do that. You got to be disruptive off the ball defensively. You got to play with 2 feet on the floor offensively and turn them over. Get them out of rhythm as best you can. Just a relentless, knockdown, drag-out, aggressive effort for 40 minutes, knowing it's the last game of the regular season and it's a rivalry, and that's what it takes at their place.
As if it needed any more dramatics, right? I mean, the Iron Bowl of basketball, making it to where, again, make it to where the committee cannot leave you outside of the March Madness tournament. I'm sorry.
That's it. Take it out of their hands. Take it out of their hands totally and bring it back into – and take some momentum into the SEC tournament, too. I mean, you're either going to be the 11 or the 12 based on the results of this game and maybe Oklahoma, Texas. But if you win, you're the 11. Take some momentum into that tournament next week.
How much stock is there, I know, at least in your opinion, I know that that's something that has drawn up a lot of conversations of just that SEC tournament on, you've seen teams that need a couple of those big wins and they get a couple of them, but the committee doesn't necessarily seem to favor that. How do you gauge the SEC tournament in a weird, unique spot that Auburn is in right now?
Yeah, I think this game is infinite. The Saturday game against Alabama is infinitely more important than the SEC tournament game because of the caliber of win you can get. It's just valued more. And we've seen, you mentioned, I mean, you've seen the last 5-6 years, teams really haven't been punished or rewarded for how they've done in the SEC tournament. So I don't think you can count on that, other than if you can take momentum into it and win a couple of more games in the tournament, then you carry momentum forward. I think it's way more about momentum and rhythm than it is, quality wins or padding a resume.
Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network here with us on the phone lines. And, sir, with everything that's going on with Auburn Athletics right now, we've mentioned baseball getting rolling, basketball heading into a big weekend. Just got off the phone lines with Britt Bowen as well, talking about Auburn women's basketball. How do people keep up with everything that y'all have going over in the world of the Auburn Sports Network?
Well, you follow AU Sports Network on social media, and then we'll kind of take them one at a time. Today, obviously, here on ESPN 106.7, you got women's basketball starting at 4:45 against Ole Miss in the SEC tournament. Over on Wings 94.3 tonight at 6, it is Tiger Talk. We're live at Baumhauer's Victory Grill. Would invite people to come out. Maybe tough to get a table tonight, so get there early. We're going to have Stephen Pearl, and we're going to have head football coach Alex Golish on the show tonight as we're less than 2 weeks away from the start of spring football practice. So come out and join us for dinner and a show. If you can't be there in person, listen on the radio on Wings 94.3, Tiger Talk tonight at 6.
Brad, we appreciate your time and the insight as always. Thank you again for joining us. We look forward to talking to you again next Thursday.
You got it, Christian. Thank you. War Eagle.
War Eagle. Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network joining us here on the phone lines. We'll take a break. We'll come back and wrap up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7.
Hey, this is your resident Super Bowl champ, Chris Candy from Unsportsmanlike, and you're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
All right, we're back to wrap up hour number one here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. We also appreciate our back-to-back guest. I'm telling you, man, a heavy guest schedule, but my goodness, so much content in the world right now of Auburn sports that why not have the experts, why not have the insiders here to join us to talk about them. We just got off the phone lines with Brad Law as he joins us every single Thursday at 2:30. Also had Britt Bowen, voice of Auburn women's basketball, to recap the historic win for Auburn basketball in the SEC tournament last night. They take on Ole Miss here coming up this evening. And so just a reminder, with every game, I guess for the next couple of games that Auburn basketball wins, we have to counteract that with no drive. And so just a reminder of that. We'll remind you again a little bit later on before the end of the show. But with that being a 4:45 tip, or 4:45 on air rather, a 5 o'clock tip, no need to have the drive on for what feels like 20 or 30 minutes. And so an off day on their side of things. So it'll be a little bit of station programming up until we get underway with the voice of the Auburn University Women's Tigers, Mr. Britt Bowen. But while we were in our break, we got some reporting news, some breaking news, Trip, from Mr. Pete Thamel talking a little Trinidad Chambliss news.
Yeah, it looks like the NCAA is going to protest the ruling that the courts in Mississippi made. They're going to appeal to the Supreme Court of Mississippi to try and get an expedient action to block that Trinidad Chambliss injunction that is going to be allowing him to play for a sixth season. So he's not out of the woods yet in Oxford. And, you know, we have a lot of thoughts on it. I'm sure you guys have a lot of thoughts on it. But you know who I do know has a lot of thoughts on it? Mr. Chris Gordy of the Locked On SEC podcast. He'll be joining us at 3:30. Make sure to stick in for that. I'm sure we'll also talk some SEC basketball, some SEC baseball as well with him. Before that, we'll be talking as well about some college basketball, Christian and myself. Look at some of the impactful games in the SEC last night. Arkansas running away with a big win at home against the Texas Longhorns. Maybe we'll get to recap number two on the mid-major game of the day. But before that, Christian, we actually get to hear some Jacob Goins today.
We do. We do. We get to hear Mr. Jacob Goins as he sits down with head coach of Auburn Gymnastics, Jeff Graba. We'll set the show for you up in hour number two, but Coach Jeff Graba of Auburn Gymnastics joins us to start hour number two. You mentioned it, Chris Gordy joining us as he does every single Thursday at 3:30. We're done with hour number one. Stick around. We got a whole lot more coming up in hour number two.
Production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7 Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. One day closer to the weekend. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm Christian Griffin. He is Trip Upton here with me in the studio this afternoon. And if you missed any of our number one, my goodness, you missed a good one. Two guests on the show. We had Britt Bowen and Brad Law giving us all of the information around Auburn men's and women's basketball, baseball, and a whole lot more. We also talked the entire Bruce Pearl situation about the Miami, Ohio Redhawks situation, the comments that he made before then, the athletic director quotes, and then a little bit more on the nepotism quotes that have been circling from Mr. Coach Bruce Pearl on how he admittedly and seemed happily to admit that he wants to cheer for his son and to make the tournament, but then also used a little bit of that nepotism to get his son that Auburn spot. So we talked all about that here in our number one. If you missed any of it, you can go to our website on ESPNAU.com, over to the podcast center, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, 100%. Do you go listen to that? Because I'm the one that uploads them, and so it makes me feel a little useful when people do. But if you're going to stick around, at least with us live, which I highly recommend you do, you should stick around for hour two. We'll have Chris Gordy of the Locked On SEC podcast. He'll be here to talk all things happening in the Southeastern Conference, whether it be going on in Mississippi with the removal of third-party taxes, NIL, and also the Trinidad news, or if it's going to be baseball and basketball as March Madness draws ever so near. We'll also recap some of that basketball action last night, what happened in Fayetteville, what happened in the Pit in New Mexico, what happened with Purdue and Northwestern. We'll talk about it all, maybe some mid-major game of the day, trying to make it a thing. So we'll hopefully go 2-2 with that one. But before that, and coming up here in just a moment, Jacob Goins, who is still in Birmingham, he was able to sit down with Jeff Graba, head coach of Auburn University Gymnastics, and they had a great conversation about what's going on with the Tigers on the mat here, coming up here in just a second.
Yeah, they do. And again, no Jacob Goins here with us in the studio. You mentioned it,
we
buddy. Inside, or was just inside the JBCC, but just finished up the Final Four contest with the Auburn High Lady Tigers and Bob Jones. And unfortunately, the Lady Tigers could not hold on to the victory, and so their season does come to a close. And so we wish Jacob to have a happy little weekend off. I know he's got a couple little things that he needs to knock out, but we do get to hear his wonderful voice here on the phone lines here this afternoon, or I guess on the station, because the magic and the power of radio. Jeff Graba sat down with Jacob a couple of days ago to recap the season so far and to preview yet another home meet for Auburn Gymnastics inside of Neville Arena.
Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader, and we continue what's been a busy winter and into the spring with Auburn head coaches joining us here on the program, and we bring back a guy who's been with us all season long throughout Auburn Gymnastics, and it's the head coach, Jeff Graba. Coach, it's great to talk to you once again, and look, I know you guys have gone up against some of the best competition in the country, and while the win-loss result isn't there, hopefully you're seeing some growth and some progress for your girls coming down the stretch.
Yeah. We're getting better. We're starting to get, I know it's crazy to say this, but this part of the season, we're actually a little more healthy now than we were at the beginning of the year. So that's a good thing. We're starting to get some people available to us. And we started the season with the hardest schedule in the country. But that last 2 weeks where it was number one, two, three, you know, that was pretty difficult. So hopefully we're on the other side of that, and you know, we got to get some confidence. We've got to get settled down a little bit, but I think the young team has ran the gauntlet, and hopefully we're on the other side feeling a little bit better about ourselves.
Well, the last time we had you here on ESPN 106.7, it was going into the Iron Bowl. It was going into the meet against Alabama inside of Neville Arena, put up a fantastic score, did your squad, then went on the road to Oklahoma. So if you're cool with it, I'd like to flash back a couple of weeks and talk about that meet against Alabama and what you saw from your girls that night, where you put up a 197.250. I mean, that's impressive stuff from this team, one of the highest scores you've had all season long.
Yeah, that was our high score, and we were pretty happy with it. You know, we've just been, you know, shuffling our lineups. We've had a lot of injuries and sicknesses. Nothing major. We had one major injury, but a majority of them were just, you know, resting people for a week or two. So a lot of inconsistency going into that meet, and we really felt like that was the meet we wanted to start settling down, starting to, you know, put the same people in the same positions, start to get some consistency, and they did a great job. You know, obviously you're up against your arch rival. They were number three when they walked into the building, and you know, it's a big test for us. But I really liked what we did. We put our foot forward in a big way as far as, you know, trying to prove to ourselves that we can compete with anybody in the country. And, you know, learned a lot, which with a young team, it's important every time you go out that you learn a lot.
And you love to put on that type of performance inside of your home building, inside of Neville Arena, because unfortunately, those number of meets are dwindling fast. You've got this one this week. You head to Huntsville. Then you've got the season finale, the regular season finale coming up against Missouri. So I'm sure you, the coaching staff, and the girls love to perform the way you did a couple of weeks ago inside of Neville Arena against Alabama.
Absolutely, and we need to do it again. Like you say, we've got three meets left. Two of them are in Neville Arena. That's a good thing for us because, you know, we love competing there. Our fans give us an advantage, and we need to have, you know, two great performances, but we need to also do well this Sunday on the road. So, yeah, going into SECs, you want to be on a roll, and there's no better way to get on a roll than to compete in Neville Arena.
Head coach Jeff Graba of Auburn Gymnastics with us here on ESPN 106.7. And so you come out of the meet against Alabama, and it doesn't get any easier like we talk about all the time in the Southeastern Conference. You took on the number three team in the nation, so your reward coach was the number one team in the nation with Oklahoma in their building. And I think by my research, that's the highest score a team has put up that you've gone up against at Oklahoma in that meet last Friday. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
And, or maybe the the second highest. I think LSU was 198. Yeah.
Yeah, LSU might have been a little bit ahead of that. But Oklahoma's done a 198. You know, the rest of the country, when we went in there, there were 10 198s in the country, and five of them were for Oklahoma.
Wow.
And the other five, everybody had one. So they're by far and away the juggernaut right now.
What makes them that, I guess? What are they doing, and how have they got there in Oklahoma being at the top? They've had some legendary girls come through there in the last several years, but what is it about that Oklahoma program that maybe you admire from afar?
Well, I mean, the main thing is consistency. They've had the exact same coaching staff the whole time they've been there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a little difficult because gymnastics, you really need to have a consistent approach. You're recruiting way out in advance, recruiting 2 or 3 years out, and those athletes need to know that your coaching staff's going to be intact when they get there because they're committing to the staff. So I think a big part of it was just their consistency with the staff is really good. You know, obviously they're supported at I would say probably the highest level in gymnastics in the country. I mean, I think they're having another $18 million renovation to their facility this year, or just had it. I think they've had two of those in the last 10 years. So there's a lot going on there. They're in the middle of a recruiting hot spot because there are no Division I Texas programs. So they're stealing a lot of those kids who want to stay close to home. And they're going to Oklahoma. So there's a lot of positives to where they are right now that the rest of us are, you know, playing catch up a little bit.
Well, that was one of the many meets that Auburn Gymnastics has gone on the road against top 10 competition. I mean, Arkansas was on the road, Georgia on the road, LSU, then this meet against Oklahoma. I mean, Coach, you and I have talked about several times here on the station and on the show about the differences in competing on your home gym and your home building on your home equipment versus going on the road. But then you're going up against crazy atmospheres with bought-in fan bases and some of the best teams in the nation. I mean, this is why you come to the SEC, right?
Yeah, I mean, you want to compete. You want to test yourself against the best. You know, going on the road is extremely difficult in our sport in particular because you have to get used to the equipment. The atmosphere is a positive and a negative. You know, a crazy atmosphere sometimes can actually gel your team into doing well. Most of the time, it's extremely difficult. But there are some positives to atmosphere. The equipment is the extremely hard thing. You know, everybody's floor exercise mat is different. All the bars are different. I think Oklahoma, this is not new to gymnastics, but Oklahoma has not lost at home since 2014.
Hmm.
So this is this is pretty normal. The number two team in the country would have the same problems we would have had going in there. But in the end, you know, you do have to be on the road for pro season. So you have to get good at that stuff. So that's part of the reason in our sport that we as a coaches association have really neglected to ever count wins and losses, because it is nearly impossible to win on the road and very difficult to get on a winning run in our sport. So the score was really important, and getting used to the equipment's really important, and peaking at the right time is really important.
Auburn falls on the road to Oklahoma, putting up a competitive score, but against the number one team in the nation, it just came up a bit short. Coach Jeff Graba with us here on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins with you this afternoon, and I want to ask a question before talking about some of the individual results there against Oklahoma and then flipping head to Michigan State this weekend. Coach, I saw some of your comments about the team competing. You felt like they perform well, even though the score may not have reflected that. How many times do you think coming out of a meet, the score doesn't directly reflect how your girls prepared and performed and executed? How many times do you feel that way, maybe in an average season throughout gymnastics?
Oh, I think for the most part, it's relatively accurate.
Okay.
There's going to be a couple of meets a year where I really feel like on a trend that I'll put it this way, you know, for every time you think you the judge didn't get it right low, they might also get a different athlete right high. So you got to take into account all of it. You can't just complain about the ones you don't like.
Sure.
And take the ones that you do like. But as far as a pattern, if you're asking me that, like a full meet that was a struggle, probably two or three a year that are really out of whack. And, you know, I walked out of that meet thinking that one didn't indicate, that was not a reflection of our performance. So some of that, you got to just talk to your athletes and say, like, we're in charge of us. We don't get to judge us. We have to decide, did we, do we accept our performance as a good performance or not? And for the most part, we did walk out of that meet thinking we did a good job. So even though the score maybe looks like it was worse than a couple other meets, our performance was probably better.
And I think the performance on vault was the thing that highlighted it all for Auburn Gymnastics against Oklahoma. Several career highs that your girls were able to perform, and Paige Zakan included or continued to perform at a high level. What'd you see from them on vault? I believe she took home the vault title, maybe a share of it there against Oklahoma, right?
Yeah. And I mean, that to me, that's a real indicator there that I do think you can't do that vault better than she did it.
Yeah.
So I don't know where their deductions came from, but I'm just really proud of her performance. She's actually done a great job getting better. You know, she was she was in three events for us last year. She was a huge part of our run to finish at number 11 last year. And she's only been in one event this year, and vault has been it. And it's been slow coming because of an injury that she was dealing with in the fall. She's starting to hit her stride now, and she's actually becoming available on other events as well. So what you're seeing is the old Paige Zakan is coming back, which is making everybody happy in our building.
Yeah, I mean, when one of your best athletes, one of your older leader athletes right on the team starts to get healthy and get back in the rotation, it's going to help everything and hopefully help morale and help performance across the way as Auburn Gymnastics now returns home to Neville Arena this Friday, March 6th, 7 o'clock against Michigan State. And people might see this and say, well, it's not an SEC team. They're probably not all that good. Wrong. They're a top 15 team no matter where you look. I believe 11th coming into this meet this weekend, Coach, and it's another one that your team has a chance to perform well, perform inside their home building, and build for what Huntsville could be, and then down the home stretch.
Yeah, absolutely. If you compare it to other sports, you don't know what Michigan State is, but in gymnastics, they're right in the center of the hotbed of recruiting. There's a few areas where there's a ton of great gymnasts and great gymnastics clubs. And the upper Midwest is a huge area. Texas is an area, Los Angeles area, and then California, and then Florida. But if you look at Michigan and the surrounding states, it's not a secret to us why they're doing so well. Mm-hmm. So they're going to come in. I think they made the Elite Eight last year. They've been on a tear this last 3 or 4 years. So yeah, and we scheduled them on purpose. We want some of the best teams in the country to come in here and test us, because our goal is to get tough and to figure ourselves out, get into the postseason, make a deep run. And the only way you do that is you compete against the very best. So yeah, this is going to be a great matchup for us, and it's going to be extremely difficult for us to persevere here.
In other sports, we would go into detail about what does Michigan State do so well? How can you stop Michigan State? What can you do to stop their best performance? But obviously, in gymnastics, you're not focused on that. You want to look into them and see what they do, but it's all about you. It's all about your team and your performers. So is there something that you're looking for in particular this weekend, Coach, or this Friday night, rather, inside of Neville Arena from someone in particular, maybe on a particular rotation, or just as a whole for your team coming back home against Michigan State this Friday?
Yeah, well, one thing that we're really looking at, you know, the Alabama meet was a really good meet for us. That was the first meet since the, you know, early January, where we really put 24 routines in a row together, and mm-hmm. they went really well. So what we did at Oklahoma was there were flashes of brilliance and then, some real straightforward just mistakes. And we've got to stop that. We've got to make sure that that was a learning experience for us. So I'm not looking for anybody in particular, because everybody's taken their turn at having a mistake here. But what I'm really looking at is our team culture, our team mentality is to come out, you know, get started fast, get after it early, and then just build on that and just get into our groove. We call it our bubble. Get into our bubble and just get on a roll. If we can do that, then we're going to be really good in the postseason, and that's really what we're practicing right now.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's right. In your bubble, that's new. I've never heard that, but I like that. It's different, but it encompasses what you guys are up to and what the Auburn Gymnastics program is trying to achieve. Again, this Friday, inside of Neville Arena, Michigan State is in town. It's a top 25 matchup, so tickets are still available. Get in the door, 7 o'clock against Michigan State. Also, they're giving away a Leo koozie. Is that right, Coach? I see that right. I'm looking at the picture right now. This thing is incredible. It's a koozie for a can or a bottle or something, but it's in the shape of a gymnastics leotard. I've never seen that.
Yeah, and I think I have not seen it, but it's derived off of one of the leotards that we had worn in the past. So I think it's off of a SUNY Leo. So one of the ones during those 2 years.
That's
so
awesome.
It's a real good place of, it's a real good memorabilia thing to come in and pick up.
Yeah, Auburn has, again, Michigan State this Friday. Then you head to Huntsville for the Elevate the Stage, where you'll see Pittsburgh, Clemson, and Georgia again, and then back home at Neville Arena against Missouri to end the regular season. But I want to get your thoughts quickly before we let you go with this meet on Friday and then immediately heading up to Huntsville and another four-team event. I mean, I know you've talked about the benefits of those, but you're going on and going up against some great competition, with one of them being an SEC team this weekend.
Yeah, and that's the whole point, right? We want to get up there. It's a podium meet, so it's elevated. That's what a good chunk of postseason will be for us, so we got to get good at that. It's a different rotation. There are four teams at the same time competing, a lot of different stuff going on, and our young team has to get good at that stuff. So, yeah, for one, just a nuts and bolts thing, we want to get good there. We got to get ourselves figured out on how to rotate and perform at a high level in that environment. But secondly, you know, Georgia's going to be there. Pittsburgh's going to be there. Clemson's going to be there. We have this Friday against Michigan State. We're going to have to beat some of those teams to advance through the bracket in the postseason. Mm. So it's a really good opportunity for us to match up. Even if we lose now, if we can make adjustments so that we can win later, that's what we're trying to stay focused on. If we beat some of them now, that's going to give us confidence, but we probably still need to try to figure out our weak spots so they don't pass us back. So these are really important meets for us coming up.
Auburn Gymnastics coming down the home stretch here in the month of March, and another home meet on Friday, March 6th. That's this week, 7 o'clock inside of Neville Arena as Michigan State comes to town. I'm Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7, and we've had Jeff Graba, the head coach of Auburn Gymnastics, with us here on the show. Coach, always appreciate your time. I know you're a very busy man getting ready for this Friday, the rest of your meets as well. Thank you so much for taking the time as always, and War Eagle.
War Eagle.
This is Evan Cohen from Unsportsmanlike, and you're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are On the Line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
Back here on the Thursday edition of On the Line, Christian Griffin, Trip Upton here with you in the studio, and we appreciate Jacob for spending some time with Coach Jeff Graba, and appreciate Coach Jeff Graba for spending some time with Jacob just to recap everything that's been going on in the world of Auburn Gymnastics, and they are back inside here once again. An incredible season, a very, very young team, and I've talked with Graba a couple of times about the transition of just having the stardom that you had on your team of so many different players, obviously highlighted by Suni Lee, but so many different players that were on that squad or a couple of the years right after. And so now having to transition to a much younger team, having a couple of girls that were battling injuries early on, and so still a whole lot of excitement in the world of Auburn Gymnastics. And rightfully so. And so we appreciate him, again, a very busy guy, especially this time of year, for spending some time to sit down and promote Auburn Gymnastics and spend time with us to be able to talk about Auburn Gymnastics. So we appreciate his time. We do have just a little bit before we get Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, with us to talk about, man, a whole lot of stuff that we were going to talk a little bit more generically about, but I feel like we have more and more specifics to talk about, Tripp. I know you mentioned it to end hour number one about the Trinidad Chambliss conversations. We also have the Mississippi NIL tax rule that the state is trying to, and I believe went ahead and passed. And so we'll obviously get his thoughts on that as well, but we're also going to get his thoughts on the hardwood. And there were a lot of games in the SEC that took place last night. Maybe not as many overly meaningful games, but some really good ones that we saw.
Actually, there was only one. Arkansas, Texas. The Longhorns went into Fayetteville and lost by 20. They outscored the Razorbacks in the second half, but an insanely good 56-34 first half for Arkansas, able to get a 20-point win there. Darius Acuff, 28-13. Again, proving why he's one of the best players in the country. Looking at some names that Auburn would know, Miami wins on the road in Dallas over SMU. Trey Donaldson, almost with a triple-double, 17.7 rebounds, 9 assists for the Hurricanes, a team that is maybe they can make a run, maybe they could be solid in March with their new head coach this season. Another name Auburn fans might know is in the UAB-Charlotte game out of the American Conference. Chase Westry had a good night. 20 points, 8 rebounds, 11 assists, former Auburn player for the Blazers.
Yeah, big-time throwback in that contest. Going back to Arkansas and Texas, and yeah, I guess only one SEC. I feel like there were others on, but just because of the top 25 games that took place last night and just the highlights from senior night rolling its way through, did you see the quotes that Sean Miller had about Darius Acuff?
No, I did not.
Oh, man. So it's something that we have talked a little bit about, both Jacob and I, and Calipari has talked a whole lot about it for Arkansas, talking in regard to why Acuff is not receiving really any Player of the Year recognition or consideration, and he says that it's an absolute crime. Sean Miller has said that, and maybe even more so. He said, quote, "Usually a guy like Acuff gets a little bit too much recognition," and we'll talk about that. Sorry, the break cut us off. Forgot my headphones. We'll talk to Chris Gordy about what Acuff did here coming up in just a little bit.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. He is Tripp Upton. I'm Christian Griffin with you in the studio. And we bring on our longtime Thursday afternoon guest, the host of the Locked On SEC podcast, Chris Gordy, joining us on the phone lines. Chris, we appreciate your time, as we always do. And thankfully today, there's no big news dropping, no state laws being changed or anything, just strictly spring football hypotheticals that we get to talk about.
I mean, it's literally something every day. It's nuts, though.
What happened to the sport that we loved, where we got to sit there and talk about the three deep and four deep a couple of years ago? Now you're at the point of sixth-year guys trying to come back and play college football, agreeing to it, and now, based off of what we're hearing, the NCAA trying to deny Trinidad Chambliss of that sixth and final year.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be successful here just because of the precedent that's been set with, you know, one, a local judge overruling them and saying, you know, that he could play. But I think also the case of he's got, you know, the deal with he's got NIL money on the table.
Right.
And, you know, you're literally telling the kid that he can't earn that money by saying he can't play this year after a local judge already ruled he can. So, I don't know. This is going to be very interesting. I talked to one of my Ole Miss guys a few minutes ago. He said this was expected. This is nothing new. They, you know, the NCAA said they were going to appeal, so they've done that. But it's just – and especially with the Mississippi state of Mississippi Supreme Court, I can't see that they're going to overturn this. So – it's possible. I mean, I give it maybe a 10% chance we see Deuce Knight on that Sunday night. And by the way, that was announced today, that Ole Miss and Louisville, we knew they were going to open the season in Nashville at Nissan Stadium, but it's now going to be a Sunday night football game. So
that's
kind of like that standalone spot we've seen the last few years on whatever that is.
Like, yeah, just the introductory week and a half, it feels like, of a college football game every single day.
Yeah, exactly. So it'll be a fun one, but you know, like I said, I put it about a 10% chance we see Deuce Knight starting that game, but most likely it's still going to be Trinidad Chambliss. But no doubt, I mean, it's fascinating to see as this, the ebbs and flows of how this thing goes back and forth. And you know, every day we question what even is the word eligibility anymore.
A 658-page filing to the Mississippi State Supreme Court today. So if they want to read through all of that and then decide to rule him ineligible, I mean, credit to them if they want to go through every single part of that. Chris Gordy here with us on the phone lines. And that's not the only dramatics coming out of the state of Mississippi that's involving the Supreme Court. And I've done a little bit of research, but definitely wanted to throw it out there to you to let you be able to talk about it a little bit more. The terminology and the concept of the state of Mississippi removing taxes from the third-party NIL deals, is this something that is confirmed? Is it already approved? Of what kind of ripple effect will that create through all of college football once that goes through and in the next stages of NIL?
Yeah, I'm no expert by any means, but what I understand, it passed whatever it is, the House, and now it has to go to the Senate, you know, whatever it is. It's something like that where it's not fully passed yet, but it does sound like it is going to be approved. And this one doesn't bother me as much because it's already happened. Arkansas did this a year ago, and nobody really raised a fuss. So I don't know why everybody's doing it now in Mississippi. I think it's just magnified because the state of Mississippi is dead last in so many things, education and health care and everything else. And so yeah, it does feel a little weird to say, hey, we're going to give a tax break to athletes coming to play here for NIL. But at the end of the day, you know, the people who live in Mississippi aren't, money's not going up on, you know, taxes aren't going up on them. They will continue to pay their state tax. It's just the kids who sign NIL, once this is passed, will not be taxed by the state. Now, they'll still pay federal taxes. They'll still, you know, all that stuff will still apply. So, you know, I had some people go, oh, there's millions of dollars. You know, the only kid that's playing for millions of dollars at Ole Miss right now in the state of Mississippi is Trinidad Chambliss. I mean, I think Kewon Lacy's probably close. But, I mean, the reality is that I think most people don't realize this. The average NIL deal that kids are signing, like just on average, is closer to like 50, 60K. Like, that's what, like, the average kids are getting, the third string tight end and stuff like that. You know what I mean? So it's not like every kid's making millions of dollars. It's, you know, it's a small group of kids in college football that are making in the millions in NIL money. So at the end of the day, it's really not a lot of money in the state of Mississippi, but I get that people were up in arms over it. But, you know, this happened a few years ago. The state of Louisiana wanted more, film production in their state. They gave, tax-free ability for movies and TV companies to come and shoot films in Louisiana.
Sure.
And I didn't hear anybody up in arms over that. Oh, you're not going to charge them a state tax. So, again, we're talking about a very small subset of athletes. On the flip side, this is a massive appeal for Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Southern Miss, all those schools to attract players to Mississippi that wouldn't otherwise go there. I mean, again, like Oxford, Mississippi is not an easy place to get to. So to me, this is a recruiting edge that they get where they otherwise wouldn't. I'm actually on board with it. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, definitely, Chris. I got a buddy of mine that's dating in a girl at Ole Miss. Oxford is 100% hard to get to. This is a trip here. And Chris, I just wanted to shift gears to baseball a little bit as, again, we're kind of now past the midweek games for the SEC and another week of, I think, casual fans not understanding what the college baseball landscape looks like with these midweek games. You have, I think the NCAA posted like a major SEC upset, and it's Southern Miss, who's one of the best teams in baseball, upsetting Mississippi State. Or, you know, you look at LSU against Northeastern. Northeastern, one of the best, better mid-majors in college baseball. What would you say to like a fan and try to grow the game a little bit and tell them what to look for these midweek games and why not to take a lot of stock into them?
Well, because the midweek games, you're experimenting. I almost compare it. I was just down in Florida a few weeks ago at spring training, and what people don't realize is like they put too much stock into what's happening in spring training and the results. And, you know, what they don't understand is a lot of guys are working on things. Like a pitcher might, I was talking with a pitcher with the Astros a few weeks ago who said he was working on a slider. He's never thrown a slider before. Mm-hmm. So he goes into a spring training game and throws a slider and gives up a home run. Well, okay, he might not throw that slider again, but he's working on something. That's kind of what the midweek games are here early in the season. It's the coaches are trying to find some new arms that they can rely on once they get into SEC play. You know who your Friday, Saturday, and Sunday starters are, at least most teams do at this point. So you're trying out new things. And, yes, LSU got upset, again last night. They lost to Louisiana Lafayette. Vanderbilt lost. Arkansas lost a midweek game. Mississippi State. I mean, everybody's losing these midweek games, but at the end of the day, they don't matter a whole lot. You're playing some young guys. You're trying to find depth. That's all this is. If it was really so important to get the wins, you throw your most reliable arm, you know what I mean? So we it feels like we go through this every year, guys, but it's like you always have to just preach to people, don't put too much stock into what happens in midweek games. Now, you can't lose all of them. I mean, you can't, I'm giving you a pass for a couple, but like, you can't go and lose every single Wednesday night game, but luckily, at least for Auburn so far, they've been pretty good in that aspect.
Yeah, Auburn walked off West Georgia a couple of weeks ago, beat Samford 6-2 here just a couple of nights ago. And it's funny that that's the mindset of these bigger programs. Yet on the flip side, which is why the big teams take it with a grain of salt, as you hear all about the craziness of the Samfords of the world that take that Auburn game as the biggest game of their season. And so the biggest thing, again, just respecting your opponents, respecting what they're going to bring, because it's going to be their best arms, their best bats every single game, especially, again, in those midweeks. Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, here with us on the phone lines, as he is every single Thursday at 3:30. And I know we're still in the middle of non-play, but is there a team or two in the Southeastern Conference that has really caught your eye, either for a really, really positive side of things, or a team that you might be worried about once SEC play hits?
Yeah, look, Texas has been very impressive. I was I went to the College Classic in Houston here last weekend. I got to see in Texas in person, and Texas is very impressive, man. Riojas, their Friday night starter, is lights out. I mean, he is as good as any Friday night starter you're going to see in the SEC when we get in the conference play. But, yeah, Texas is a perfect 12-0. I think only a handful of times have they started the season 12-0 in their history. So Texas is going to be dangerous, man. They were really good last year. Obviously, they Schlossnagel and them, they go and get upset at home in the regional against UTSA. But, Texas is loaded. I think Florida looked pretty good. They went down to Miami they beat Miami in two games, and then Sunday the weather the weather was a factor, and Miami was like, you know what, let's not play a third, we're good. So Florida's really good. A&M's looked really good. Ole Miss just took their first two losses of the season last weekend, but one of them was to Coastal Carolina, who is again loaded up and looking pretty good. So those are the teams that I think are at the top. Look, I think LSU will be fine despite the midweek losses. The one I'm worried about is Vanderbilt. I mean, they were, you know, supposed to be a preseason top 25 team, and man, they came out of the gates losing a couple games early, and then they go out to Las Vegas last weekend and get swept. Playing teams like Oregon and that. So, they lost the midweek game. They open with LSU at home in next week. So I'm going to be really curious to see what Tim Corbin's group looks like, because they've been pretty disappointing so far out of the gates.
And this is Chris Gordy with the Locked On SEC podcast. Chris, changing gears finally to basketball with the final weekend of SEC regular season play coming up on Saturday. And there's a lot of big games going on across the Southeastern Conference, but I think probably number one is the Iron Bowl of basketball, Auburn, Alabama. Auburn playing for their tournament lives. A win probably gets them on the right side of the bubble. Alabama looking to lock up a top four seed and the season series against Auburn. What are some other games that people maybe outside of the state of Alabama are looking forward to and really paying attention to across the SEC?
Yeah, I mean, well, you mentioned, I mean, this would be a massive game for Auburn if they could find a way to get a win. I don't see them doing it. It's going to be really hard for them to go into Coleman Coliseum and find a way to get a win. But, and look, I think if they lose this win, let's just say they lose by 20 or something, you know, get embarrassed, I think you've got to go win a couple games in the SEC tournament to really solidify your chances at the postseason. But, outside of Auburn, I mean, you know, look, Arkansas, Missouri is very intriguing. Arkansas beat the snot out of Texas last night. They've been really, really good at home. They've had some good road wins as well, but that's a big game for Mizzou. Mizzou has kind of been trying to solidify themselves as, you know, one of the top five, six teams in the SEC this year. That would be a huge win if they could get that one. Vandy at Tennessee, Vanderbilt's been that team that's just been hanging around and way better than I thought and a lot of people thought.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they could give Tennessee a game, that'll be a big one. And then, can Florida finish things off? They got to go to Rupp Arena and play, Kentucky team that's just been up and down all season long. But, man, a 10-game win streak where they've been beating opponents by 23 points per game on this stretch. I mean, it's absolutely insane what the reigning champs have done. And then, lastly, watch out for Oklahoma, man. I know, you know, look, they snuck up on Auburn a couple days ago, and they don't look down, but they've won five of their last seven after they went on that long losing streak. And now Texas, at 18-12 overall, 9-8 in the SEC, don't lose at home to Oklahoma here, because that'll really be a wrench in your side. So, again, watch out for Oklahoma, man. They've been playing really good basketball as of late.
Chris, are you telling me that Auburn's win at home over LSU didn't completely move the needle for you? They didn't show that they were back. It didn't bring you full confidence that Stephen Pearl could get this team into the Sweet 16?
No, I think what do we call that? Is that a quad three or a quad four win? I mean, I don't know where LSU is this year, but they're terrible. So, no, it did not move the needle. And I'll tell you this, guys. We did a show on this earlier this week on Locked On SEC. The comments I got from Auburn fans is pretty split. Half are, you know, hey, get rid of the guy. It was a nepotism hire. Let's go get somebody proven. And the other half are pretty in the boat of, hey, man, look, he was handed a rough deal. Tried to put a roster together, didn't have much time. These guys don't listen to him because he didn't, you know, they're not his players.
Yeah.
So everybody, you know, that consensus is, hey, give him a full offseason to build his team with his players, and let's go get this thing next year. So I've been pretty surprised how split it's been.
It's actually a really good quad two win somehow for the Auburn Tigers, as LSU was the 75th ranked team in the net. So Auburn moves to 4-2 in their quad two games, in addition to the 4-11 record now in quad one games. We got Chris Gordy here with us, the host of the Locked On SEC podcast, our longtime Thursday guest at 3. 3:30. And you mentioned, Chris, the postseason tournament. And if Auburn goes out and they lose to Alabama, you mentioned needing one, if not two, if not three wins just to kind of convince the committee that this Auburn team needs a couple of wins. You feel like they're in a very unique spot, though, almost comparable to Texas A&M a couple of years ago or a couple other teams, to where you're either really hoping for a couple of wins or you're flirting with missing the tournament if you go one and done. How much stock is there truly being put into the Southeastern Conference tournament in Nashville right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important for a couple of those teams, like I said, that are kind of teetering. And, you know, I mentioned Oklahoma real quick. I know they, you know, if they beat Texas on Saturday, they'll get to 7-11. But if they win a couple of games in the SEC tournament, I think they really put themselves in a spot to say, hey, committee, you know, consider us. But, you know, Georgia, obviously, they're 9-8, 21-9 overall. I think Georgia's pretty soundly in. But, yeah, you know, from Texas to Auburn, you know, I think those are teams that are kind of, you know, watch yourselves. If you lose this weekend, I think you got to go win a game or two in the tournament.
Texas A&M listed as one of the last four byes. Auburn, depending on the bracketology from earlier in the week, the first team out, but right now sits as the second team out right now, according to where you look. And so, man, you're just at such a weird spot if you are the Auburn Tigers, trying to get one of those big-time wins, trying to win over your rival. But Chris Gordy, not necessarily a believer in the Auburn Tigers in doing so. Did you see the quotes from Bruce Pearl earlier in the week, talking not only about the Redhawks of Miami of Ohio not being one of the best teams, but almost seeming very confident in talking about Stephen being that nepotism hire, that he wanted him to be the next coach at Auburn?
Oh, yeah. I'm just glad he owned it. I mean, it's all this time, you know, it's like people.
I mean, it was a really good secret around the Plains. I mean, nobody knew.
Yeah, I think it's fine. Why not just own it publicly? But, yeah, kind of a bad look with him saying, bashing Miami of Ohio, saying they shouldn't get in. I mean, at least if Bruce isn't on the selection committee, he's not going to be voting Auburn in, because we know where his allegiance would lie.
Very much so. Very much so. Well, Chris, we appreciate your time as always. Let everybody know what you got going on, where they can find you with everything Locked On SEC.
Yeah, Locked On SEC, wherever you get your podcast. And, you know, had a great interview just a couple days ago with Nakai Hill Green from Alabama. Talked about looking back on the season, talked about the Iron Bowl with him. And, yeah, man, today's episode kind of previewing Florida and Missouri and South Carolina, who got their spring camp underway, and I'll be doing the same over the next couple of weeks, Locked On SEC.
Well, I guess the very last question, then, maybe a couple of teams that you are really looking forward to seeing some information come out of the SEC camps as everything gets started here, whether it's this week or early next week.
Yeah, I think it's the schools with, you know, with all the quarterback battles going
sure,
on.
Yeah.
You know, obviously Alabama is the big one, but you know, Tennessee now with Joey Aguilar not getting eligibility. So, yeah, I mean, but for the most part, I mean, I'd say 90% of the SEC, we know who the quarterbacks are.
Well, there we go. Chris, we appreciate your time. Looking forward to diving deeper into that as spring camp gets underway here on the plane. Shortly, we'll talk all about it here with you next Thursday.
All right, fellas. Thanks.
Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, joining us on the phone lines, as we mentioned, as he does every single Thursday at 3:30. Appreciate his insight, his knowledge just around the entire SEC as a whole. We'll take a break as we have now concluded our major guest-heavy schedule. We'll come back and have a few minutes to kind of dive into maybe some more college basketball talk from last night, some more college games coming up tonight, and we'll wrap up the show right after this.
War Eagle, this is Coach Larry Vickers, and you're listening to ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader and home of Auburn women's basketball.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up the Thursday edition of On the Line, we appreciate everybody for being here with us, whether it's ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, or that Radio Alabama app. My goodness, a guest-heavy schedule on the booth today, and what better way would you like it? Again, everything going on in the world of Auburn athletics. We got to talk with Britt Bowen, voice of Auburn women's basketball, who you will hear in just a little bit. 4:45 is the scheduled on-air time with a 5 o'clock tip. Auburn and Ole Miss doing battle in the second round of the SEC tournament. We'll have Caleb Robertson here with us in the studio, taking us Caleb the round of the way with Britt Bowen. They're going to take trip spots here in just a few minutes. We also got Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network. We got to talk to him about some midweek baseball, Auburn basketball as well, and what he wants to see from the Auburn Tigers on Saturday in Coleman Coliseum. We also continued, my goodness, our plethora of conversations that we've had with so many Auburn University head coaches. Jacob Goins got to sit down with Jeff Graba yesterday, the head coach of Auburn Gymnastics, and we got to preview everything that's coming up this weekend and recap the season so far up to this point. And then we just got off the phones, the phone lines with Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, giving us all of his insights around everything in the Southeastern Conference. So a very heavy guest schedule format, but my goodness, what better way would you like to have it? Trip, appreciate you for being here with us this afternoon.
Always, absolutely. It's always a pleasure, and I'm glad to be able to help out, and it can only fill the shoes of the giant of the shoulders that I stand on of Jacob Goins.
A reminder, no drive this afternoon. A little bit of ESPN programming for just a little bit before Auburn women's basketball with Britt Bowen to get you underway at 4:45. Auburn and Ole Miss. Free for all Friday coming up tomorrow, 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. For Jacob Goins and for Mr. Trip Upton, I'm Christian Griffin saying so long. Until tomorrow, we'll talk to you later.